everyone, this is Dr. Ul Henson. This is one of my episodes in a podcast called The Medicine of Success. And today we have a guest here, my classmate in med school. His name is Dr. Romel Go, and I knew him as one of the brighter students in our class, and more than average of, and better than me, for sure. And I knew he was going to have a big success somewhere, but next thing I knew, he was already in the States, making it big in Alabama. And since the title of our talk is From Laguna to Alabama, the American Dream, we're going to talk about his journey from the Philippines to the States. Okay? So, hi, Dr. Romel Go, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So how's everything there in Alabama?
We're good. We're still, you know, in self-quarantine, but we're doing well.
Okay, you're still having your clinic?
Yes. I still, since we're considered as essential business, we continue to do our job and take care of patients.
Okay, so basically you're like a frontliner, parang kuno frontliner, right?
That's true.
Okay. So stay safe, huh? So now I'm gonna ask you a few questions. Our listeners want to know how your journey was, because maybe some of our listeners are medical students and residents, or and they wanna try it in the States, and we wanna know how your journey was. So where are you from?
Well, I was born in the Philippines, in the province of Binan, Laguna. I was told that I was born in a public hospital somewhere over there. So yeah, that's where I came from.
And then your parents are doctors also, or what did they do for a living?
No, my mom used to be just she's a stay-home mom. Right. My father has some different kind of odd jobs, or he never really had a job. So Yeah, so that's pretty much it. So, we were not born rich, so we really had a struggle early in life.
Yeah, you struggled early in life. Yeah, that's usually the stories of doctors or people with hunger, and they excel more. And how about your siblings? You have like brothers, sisters?
Right. All of them are still in the Philippines. I have an older sister and a younger brother and a younger sister. All of them are still staying there.
Okay, so you're basically the only one here in the States. That's right. Good. And then what decided you to, why do you want to become a doctor? Of course, in high school, where did you find out, or where did you have that calling to become a doctor?
Well, it's all because of my mom. She always brings me to this pediatrician in the local clinic in our barrio, and I still remember him. So she keeps telling me that, someday you need to be a doctor to help the poor. And that kind of get ingrained in my mind at a young age. And I told my mom, that I'm going to become a doctor for her one day. So it's all because of my mother that I became a doctor.
Okay, that's nice. So when did you decide, like in high school, or of course high school, because college, by the time college, you're already in pre-med, right?
Right. Well, I already know that when I was in high school that I'm going to be a doctor. So that's why they call me Docs,
Okay. We call you Docs also.
Right. Because, from early on, I know that I'll be going to med school. And so everybody knows that someday I'll be a physician. So that's where my nickname came from.
That's nice. Like me, I wanted to become a physician since high school also, because, my father was a doctor also. That's why I was encouraged. But basically, you were also encouraged by your mom instead, right?
That's correct.
And then what was your what college did you go to?
Okay, well, I went from a Chinese high school to University of Santo Tomas. My pre-med was medical technology.
Oh, med tech. So you were in medical technology. And then from there, you went to USC Med School. Yeah, you were my classmate.
That's right.
And then from there, what decided you? Okay, what did you decide, Philippines or States? Or what happened? What was your thinking then?
Well, as you know, since you know being my classmate, I had a girlfriend then, and all my plan was to basically stay in the Philippines, of course. But I realized that I won't be able to make it over there financially successful. So, and also in practice. And during that time, during internship, I heard about this USMLE thing that they're doing, and that's when I decided, you know what? I figured in order for me to be successful, or anyone to be successful in the Philippines as a physician, you have three requirements, basically. Number one, either you're a son or a daughter of a physician. Number two, you're rich, okay? And number three, you know some influential people. And I have none of those. So me to, you know, to stay in the Philippines and try to work it out there, I will have a very hard time. So I decided, you know what?
Okay.
I might try my luck in another country.
Which is the US, right?
That's right.
So from what I see, you had that hunger, you know, that hunger because you didn't have those three conditions or three factors that you think that would make you practice in the Philippines. So since you didn't have those, you had that hunger to make it big somewhere, right? And correct. So you decided to take the USMLE, step one and two. Yeah. And then what happened?
So I have to borrow money from my dad and from my brother to take, you know, one and two. And then I took the Philippine board exam at the same time. So fortunately, I passed every test, and I decided to, you know, travel to United States with the help of my cousin who lives in California. So that's when I went for all my interviews, and I was fortunate enough to be pre-match at Elmer's Hospital, which is very famous right now because that's where all the outbreaks are in Queens, New York. And yeah, so, that's also right. Yes.
So what decided you to what type of residency program did you decide on?
I always knew when I was still in med school that I'm not going to be a surgeon since I have a bad back. And I'm so clumsy, so there's no way that I'll be a surgeon. So, but I do know that I love physiology. I kind of excel on that, even though I don't really try very hard. So I figured internal medicine is the way to go. So, and I always like, you know, talking to people and being a, you know, like a clinical detective trying to figure out what's going on with a patient. So internal medicine is basically what I wanted to do. And it turned out that there's a lot of residency, not a lot, but, you know, out of the different residency training, internal medicine is one of those that you can get into higher success rate. Right.
Okay. So did you apply to many hospitals or just Elmhurst, or how did you do it?
No, I applied to at least five hospitals in New York. And my first interview was with Elmhurst Hospital. And then I did, you know, a few more interviews just in the small area in New York. Because there's a lot of hospital, you know, right.
So, yeah. And you know what? You know, I think you know that my father also went to Elmhurst
Hospital
for his ENT residency during the 60s. So I have a little something in common. And plus now the COVID crisis I think Elmhurst is the main hospital now, right? Is that right?
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. In Queens. Okay. That's the biggest hospital in Queens.
Okay. So when you were in Elmhurst, was there a culture change, you know, from the Philippines, then you go to the California, of course, in California, you have your cousin, and then suddenly you're in Elmhurst in New York, you know, it's a melting pot of all these, you know, it's a big city. How did you assimilate in New York? How did you start over? Is there a culture shock or change, anything?
Well, definitely, there's a huge culture shock, you know. I have to learn how to speak English more because I never practiced it when I was in the Philippines, you know. There's a lot of immigrants. It's very diverse. You know, you see a lot of different cultures. So it was very shocking to me. And I have to adapt really quick in order to survive in that area.
Okay. So did you have any friends there to, you know, some of like our classmates were there. Did you contact them or you just went through it by yourself and just sugod na lang, you know, just go for it?
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, we were in contact, you know, of course, Manny Gizano, our common friend.
Yeah.
We were in contact prior to interview. And, you know, of course, Gary Labrada is also a good friend of ours. So when before the interviews, we were kind of we have contact with each other. But after the interview, after the matching and residency and during the residency program, we kind of lost touch with each other. And it's funny, one day, I think it's just midway during my residency in first year, I was walking along Queens Boulevard and I saw somebody that looked familiar and it turned out to be Manny Gizano. So
our classmate.
Yeah, we just kind of bumped into each other and we were surprised that we pretty much live in close by in the same areas in Queens. So then that's where it all started. We started to connect with other friends and every now and then we get together.
Yeah, because, you know, some support around the area is also important because if you're just by yourself, it's kind of hard. I know how you feel. I know how you feel. So with all our friends, there are classmates, Gary and Manny. And then how was the residency program? Did you excel also? I mean, like, you know, I saw you excel in med school. Did you give it a shot to be one of the best residents there in Elmhurst?
Well, yeah, being a foreign medical graduate, you need to compete with other foreign medical graduates. And you also have to prove yourself to the local graduates. So I have to try to do my best. So from the very first day, I decided I will need to excel in every aspect of our training. So fortunately enough, I was voted, you know, most outstanding intern and second year and third year resident.
Nice. Okay. And then so you learned all these stuff from internal medicine and then you graduated and then you have to take the boards, right? So where did you take the boards?
When I was doing my fellowship in infectious disease at Downstate University, that's when I took the board. And fortunately enough, you know, I passed it too. And during my first year of fellowship, there was an opening in Alabama to join a practice so they can give me a waiver. So I decided to do my 1 year of clinical infectious disease rotation and then move to Alabama after that.
Oh, I didn't know that you went into fellowship in infectious disease. So you fell in love with Alabama and you didn't go back anymore, right?
That's right. I have an option to finish my fellowship, but I decided to just continue practicing primary care here in Alabama.
Okay, so now you're in Alabama. You got your job. What did you do first in Alabama? What's your first job or hospital or practice?
Well, basically, I was hired to do primary care, and I did traditional medicine. Basically, you see patients in the office, outpatient practice, and then you also admit patients in the hospital. So that was very difficult, especially here in Alabama. So I did that for at least 10 years.
So you were an internal medicine graduate and almost an infectious disease. And when you go to Alabama, you go primary care. So that's kind of too basic, right?
Right. You know, well, during my residency, mine is internal medicine and primary care. So I'm pretty much well trained. Doing primary care to begin with anyway.
So this Alabama thing you're where you're at, is it just a is it a choice or it just something came to you or was it what happened there? I mean with your choice in Alabama?
No, it wasn't really my choice. You know, people are asking me, why are you going to Alabama?
I know.
Everybody just don't know anything about Alabama. Coming from New York and, you know, to Alabama is another culture shock. But yeah. my you know, my fiance then, you know, Maria Rubin, she got into this waiver program in Alabama in a very small town in Marshall County. It's called Boaz. And in order for me to, and I was going to Rhode Island then, I had a, being a foreign medical graduate and you have a J-1 visa, you need to have a waiver in order for you to be converted to a working visa and eventually become a green card holder and subsequently a U.S. citizen. So it's a long process. It's a long process to become a legal citizen in the United States. So we have to find an area where they will sponsor us first for the first 3 years so that we can convert our J-1 visa, or else we'll be required to go back to the Philippines to stay there for at least 2 years. Then that's the only time you're allowed to apply to go back to the United States. And most of us don't want to do that. You know, so we're pretty much accustomed to the, you know, to the way of living in the United States. So we just don't want to go back there and start all over again. So that's how I ended up being in Alabama. My wife got accepted first. And then I was supposed to go to Rhode Island. There's a waiver program there that they're going to, they're willing to sponsor me. But my wife's employer then decided, you know what, it's a no-brainer. I can just go ahead and recruit him so you and your husband can stay here in Alabama and help build the practice. So that's how I ended up going to Alabama.
Yeah, okay, I got it. So it's true love with Gigi, huh? It's true love because Rhode Island is and closer.
Employment opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. No, because of course, since you're the maybe fiance already getting married, why not join her? You know? And my other question now is it still the process now that in this day and age for residents or for medical students who want to apply there, they have to do a J-1, a waiver, and then a green card? Is still the same?
It's still the same. In fact, I'm trying to recruit a J-1 physician right now from Ecuador. And
Ecuador.
Basically, it's the same steps as what I did before.
Okay, nice. And then through your 10 years, now it's your almost 20 plus years practice in Alabama. After 10 years of primary care, what did you do? What other things did you do?
So initially I was an employee. I was, you know, when I finished my residency, I'm sorry, when I finished my J-1 requirement and became a green card holder, I was able to have the opportunity to buy in. And so I told
my practice.
To the practice, because I just don't want to become an employee. I figured, you know what?
Exactly.
I'm the one who's instrumental in making the practice big. I was the one who recruited all the physicians and did a lot of things to the practice to make it big. So I decided, well, I need to be part of it. I need to have skin in the game. So that's why I talked to my employer then. And I said, listen, if you want me to stay, I need to become an owner as well. And he was kind enough to give me a 50% ownership. I have to pay him like $500,000 to buy in. I mean, that's a huge amount of money then, but
huge amount. Yeah.
Right. But I did, you know, when I was growing up, I'm always kind of stingy to myself. I tried to save a lot of money and work hard. So that's what I did. So I have saved enough money to at least invest in that. So that was one of the best.
That's a huge risk, but I think it's a nice risk. It's a good risk.
It's a calculated risk since all of the practice and you can direct where the practice is going. So I decided, yeah, you know what? I think it's time to buy in. So that's what I did.
That's nice. So how many are you guys in the practice? Just the two of you? Since it's 50%, you said?
Well, initially we started out as, you know, three physicians, me and my wife and my previous employer. His name is Dr. Ufford. So there's three of us. And then we hired more, you know, physicians, we hired more nurse practitioners. It grew to about to 10 providers. And we were doing really great.
That's nice. So when you say 10 providers, that means 10 doctors. Because sometimes that's 10 doctors, right? Or
I think we have like 5 to 6 doctors and four nurse practitioners.
Okay, got it. And then how long did you do this? How long did you do this group practice?
For
up
10
to now?
So we, you know, we were partner 50-50 partners for 10 years. And then eventually, because of the 20-year age gap between the two of us, we realized that he's ready to retire, and I'm still wanting to go forward and take more risk. That's when we decided, you know what, it's time to split up. And, you know, since he doesn't want to invest much more to the practice. And so I decided to just go ahead and have my own practice. So we kind of separated in 2018. And that's when I built my own practice.
Okay. So now you have your own practice. How does it feel to have your own? It's your own now. Remember, you started as an employee. And now you own it all for yourself. How does it feel? How does it feel for you?
Well, you know, there's a lot of pros and cons. Of course, now that I'm no longer a 50% partner, I'm the 100% owner. So I'm the one that's taking all the risk. And at least, you know, every decision that we have to make, I'm the one who gives the final decision or makes the final decision. And
So this is the same area or building where the clinic was, or that's the old one. So now you have a new clinic, right?
Right. So when I'm established my own practice, you know, the previous doctors and nurse practitioners decided all to join me. So I started out with, like, you know, four doctors and four nurse practitioners to begin with in 2018. And the hospital provided us with small clinics. So we were pretty much apart. Instead of being in one area, we have to go to practice in multiple clinics in order to accommodate everybody. That's when I decided that we need to have one huge building so that we can be under one roof, which is a lot easier to manage rather than managing different clinics at multiple sites. So that's
I agree with you.
Right. So that's when I decided, you know what, we need to build a huge building, up-to-date facility with all the bells and whistles in it. So we went ahead and built a $5 million building in Boaz, which is pretty much close to the same from the old practice that I did my practice in the past.
Yeah, so this is a huge step on your part, because remember you, before you just invested $500,000 just to join the practice. Now it's really 10 times the risk now.
Yeah, and that's just for the building, not even for the daily finances of the practice. That's just for the building. So you can imagine.
Equipment.
Right, that's, you know, the equipments are separate. So you can just imagine how much risk I have to take in order to, to get to that point where we have a building, a huge building with all the amenities in it and all the furniture and equipments to practice.
Okay, nice. So, classmate, I'm proud of you. You know, from remember in med school, we just drink and, you know, have fun, study. That's all we do. And then now we went on a different path. I'm here in the Philippines and you're there, and I could see you growing. And now you have your own building, your own practice. And I'm just happy that you're there now. So how's the clinic now?
Well, you know, we're still busy. We're averaging around 200 patients a day.
200.
Yes, 20 patients a day. We're open Monday to Sunday. And we rarely close. There's only a few holidays in the year that we close down because of the demand. So I have to hire more people in order to have at least, you know, a life of my own. So that's what I do. That's what I do. I mean, that's the way to go. I mean, if you have to have good quality of life, it's not just all work, then you have to hire people to, to help you out.
I agree with you. So you're not anymore a business operator. You're now a business owner. because you're not anymore operating the community. You own it now, so you're running it. Instead of you always there, you can just have, you know, just a little bit of vacation here and there and enjoy with your family. That's life, you know. Life is all about the small stuff, the good stuff, right?
That's so true.
So now, what's your future plans? What are your future plans? And any other huge thing that we need to know about Dr. Romel Goh, the successful Alabama kid?
I don't know about that, but because of all this pandemic, you never know. But my plan prior to this pandemic was that, well, I think it will be still achievable, is that I have to hire more people. You know, it's hard now to recruit doctors. And but, you know, we have partnership with the hospital. They're trying to recruit doctors for us since they know I'm a big part of the community. And I have this lot that I have beside my current building, and I'm planning to put up another building down the road with God's blessings to probably a multi-specialty clinic.
And nice. Also, so you're a primary care also now?
Right. I'm still doing internal medicine, but I'm more of a diabetologist. You know, I practice, I see a lot of diabetic patients. And recently I passed the, I became board certified in addiction medicine. As you know, here in the United States, before this pandemic, we were talking more about opioid epidemic. So now it's pretty much got placed at the back burner, and we have to deal with this coronavirus pandemic.
Okay, so now you've mentioned that coronavirus pandemic. So any thoughts on this pandemic? And, you know, Alabama is kind of in the middle of the United States. New York, usually the ones affected are New York and on the West Coast. What's your thoughts on this coronavirus?
Well, I'm glad that you asked me that. I was asked by two radio broadcasters a couple of days ago about that. They're asking me for some good news. And unfortunately, you know, we don't have much good news to share. Right now, what we know is that the practice of social distancing, staying home, and practicing good hygiene does help flatten the curve. And we know that for a fact. And we're seeing that in New York City right now. The problem is we are seeing more and more cases here in Alabama. So we haven't reached our peak yet. And we're just at the early stage of it. So that's what I'm concerned about. But like what I said to the radio broadcasters that interviewed me, we're not going to have a normal life until we come up with a vaccine and an antiviral treatment for people that are sick with the COVID-19. We need to have immunity in order to go back to our normal way of life. So either you get that through, you know, through getting exposed to the wild coronavirus or getting vaccinated. But so far, we're not going to have any vaccine available until 18 months from now. So until then, I don't think we're going to be able to go back to our normal way of living.
So you said 18 months. That's correct. Pretty long from now until we get a vaccine. And plus, remember, you're in the United States. You have easy access after 18 months. To the Philippines, it will take maybe 2 years, 18, 24 months. So it's really scary. And you know why? You said it will take 18 months that before we can go back to our normal life. I don't think we'll go back to that normal life again. It's more of a different. It's we were gonna go back there, but I think it's already a different life. You know, you're always scared about, you know, all these things, and you're gonna be more prepared, like with your alcohol and washing up hands. Before, you sometimes you don't do that, but now you have to really protect yourself, right?
Well, it's always, you always look at the, you know, you always look at as either half full or half empty glass of water. Maybe this will teach us, you know, to have better practice down the road, teach us to have better health in order to not get sick and not die from the coronavirus. But my prediction is that this is just my personal opinion. This is going to be like the seasonal flu down the road. Once we have the vaccine and once we have the treatment for it, then I'm sure people will feel more relaxed and most likely will go back to, you know, their previous way of life. But most also they'll be more cautious too. So that's a good, we need to be cautious to begin with. I mean, you know, prior to this, we have so many deaths from the flu that can be prevented by getting the, you know, the vaccines and practicing good hygiene. And but prior to this, people are still refusing to get the flu shot. So now that most this is most likely going to teach them that vaccine is very important. And if we ever come up with a vaccine with the coronavirus, I'm sure people will be lining up to get it.
That's true. Same here in the Philippines. Sometimes they actually don't have the flu vaccine because, I don't know, for some reason or another, especially in the Philippines, the dengue vaccine was kind of controversial. But anyway, that's another story. And at least I have a relative idea how you think, how you thought about this pandemic. And my last question, Docs or Dr. Romelgo, is... with your journey in the States from Laguna to Alabama, you know, all of us have a secret sauce or a secret to success. You know, what is your secret to success?
A lot of people have asked me that question, okay, and I keep giving the same answer. I mean, this is my personal opinion, and you know, you can take it with a grain of salt, but what I realize is that there are two things that you need to be successful. One, you need to really have to work hard for it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Number two, you need to be blessed. Okay. And that's something that you don't earn. That's just a favor from God. Now, other people who does not have that faith will say, well, I'm just lucky. You know, I have seen so many people that are more intelligent than I am, more hardworking than I am, but they were never given an opportunity, just like what I had. So that's the blessing that I got from the Lord. Mm-hmm. But I have seen so many people too that were blessed to begin with, but they don't have the passion, the drive, you know, to do the hard work, and they squandered their blessing, and they ended up nothing as well. So for me, number one, you have to be blessed by the Lord, you know, so that you can get the right opportunity, and then you need to be hardworking and persevering so that when that opportunity knocks, you just don't let it go. You grab it by the neck and make sure that you follow through all the way.
I agree with you 101,000%. And from what you said, hard work, okay, I call that hunger, passion, and focus. And then for the blessing, I call that grace, which means, you know, whatever you think of it, you may be lucky, but you had the grace and the blessing for this opportunity, Docs. You were lucky, actually, and by the grace of God, you got this opportunity to be in Alabama. Imagine, of all places, you're in Alabama, but I think you're at home now, right at home in Alabama. Oh, and one day I will visit you.
You better come and visit me, definitely.
Remember, we were talking, you know, our friends in med school, we call that a barcada, you know, in the Philippines, we call that a barcada. Our barcada in med school, we were talking about going to Doc's place because he has a mansion, you know, he has a swimming pool and all these great stuff. But I'm sure all of that was there because of the hard work of our good friend, Dr. Romelgo. Anyway, any last words to our listeners?
I would just like to thank you all for listening to this podcast and supporting my friend here, Dr. Raul Hansen. And, you know, the one thing that really carried me all throughout this journey is knowing that I have friends like you and I always try to, during hard times, I have been through a lot of battles and journeys and hardships. the one thing that really keeps me going is, you know, when I'm really down, is the past memories of all the fun things that we did, all the crazy things that we have done in the past. That always brings a smile to my face. And, you know, just for a short period of time, it gives me some sort of reprieve from all the things that's going around me, all the craziness. And I was able to move forward and just keep going forward.
I'm sure, you know, you're so busy, Docs, you know, how you have like a huge center now. And I could relate because we also have our own here in the Philippines. And I could imagine the problems and, you know, the everything that goes to you, everything, the buck stops on you. So anyway, I want to thank you, no, for being our guest in this podcast. And I, you know, the reason why I guested you because you're one of my classmates who are really hardworking, and you have your own center now in the States, and that's not an easy task. It's a tall order, and I'm pretty proud that you have your own practice there with your own center, with your own building. And again, thanks, Docs, and hopefully we can get together. Thank you again.
Sure. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's our episode for The Medicine of Success. This is Dr. Raul Henson. Keep safe and stay safe, and God bless.
All right. Same to you all. Bye-bye.